Hello, I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio. It's the Oscar weekend, and we're going to have an Oscar segment at the end of the show with my friends Gary Cogill and Haley Hamilton Cogill. Gary's going to talk about film because that's what he does, and Haley is a sommelier and a writer, and they do a podcast on film and wine. We'll tell you all about it. By the way, Gary's going to pick your Oscar winners for you. And also, not only is it Oscar weekend, but Saturday, the 41st annual Vancouver International Wine Festival starts. We're going to be talking to four sommeliers about what they would look for, what they advise anyone who asks them about how to approach this huge festival. And we're going to talk to Matt Landry, the Sommelier of the Year just announced. He's with Stablehouse Bistro, Krista Linnebo from Labatoire, Kelsey Jones from Shambar, and Curtis Colt, who's a star unto himself, and with the Georgia Strait as well. And then we get to the icons and young guns, the headliners from California. The icons are Joel Peterson, the founder of Ravenswood Winery, the godfather of Zin. His Punchdown Press is in the Smithsonian Institute. He's in the Hall of Fame. And from Robert Mondavi, Mark DeVere, master of wine. The young guns are Tom Gore from Tom Gore Wines. He's a grower and he's a winemaker. He's very good. And from Meiomi, Central California Wines, the winemaker Melissa Stackhouse. And we hope to be talking to some 30 winemakers at the Vancouver Wine Festival. And that is this edition of Tasting Room Radio. We've got a long way to go. You ready? Here we go. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Bench 1775. Bench 1775 will be pouring at Flourish at Vancouver Community College Wednesday, March the 13th, and then will be part of the Naramata Bench Wineries Association pour in Victoria for Rewind Wednesday, April 24th. All the details at bench1775.com. Tasting Room Radio, Terry David Mulligan. The Californians are coming. It's the opening day of the Vancouver International Wine Festival on the occasion of the show. And we're going to be talking to several of them, actually. Actually, we're going to be talking about 30 of them by the time we're done. But we wanted to get out in front of the festival and talk to some of the stars. And Tom Gore is going to be along in just a couple of minutes' time. But first, we start with Meiomi Wines and Melissa Stackhouse, who is the winemaker, and the art of making wine. At what point did the art of making wine get serious with you?
Well, it's an interesting question. I took a pretty circuitous route to winemaking. I grew up in Lansing, Michigan, but I spent a lot of my adult years not too far from Vancouver in Bellingham, Washington.
Woohoo!
I was working at the newspaper there for a while and doing all sorts of stuff prior to really understanding what I wanted to do as a career. And I was out wine tasting one day on Lopez Island, as you know, one of the San Juan Islands,
sure,
and discovered that you could go to school to learn how to make wine.
Was it something you tasted or was it just the class itself?
Yeah, no, I had been wine tasting, and once I learned I could go to school to learn how to make wine and understand grape growing, I moved to California and went to the University of California at Davis. I lived in the Napa Valley for about 5 years and then slowly moved my way over to Sonoma County, and with that move, shifted perspective a little bit, from making Cabernet to Pinot Noir.
Melissa Stackhouse, the winemaker at Meiomi Wines, and she is going to be at the Vancouver International Wine Festival. I thought I saw a quote from you somewhere in my research about being sort of under the radar. You were quite happy just making your wines. But this is your first time in the market in Vancouver, really, as the lead at Meiomi. Are you looking forward to it?
Oh, yeah, I'm very much looking forward to it. Yeah, like I said, I didn't live too far from Vancouver, so I love the Pacific Northwest. Kind of eager to be in the city and take part in all the festivities as well as taste the wonderful food that Vancouver has to offer. I do remember that it's quite a foodie haven. So I'm looking forward to that.
How about California as the feature region? Now, normally it's Italy or it's Greece or whatever, but the timing of California being the feature region Is it good timing in terms of all that's happened, the fires and the earthquakes and the drought?
Boy, I mean, it's Mother Nature, right? Grape growing in general and making wine. And so we're at the mercy of whatever is given to us.
What are you pouring in Vancouver?
We have Meiomi Pinot, which is kind of the fulcrum by which it all rotates from Meiomi, since that is the first wine that was produced by Joey Wagner. And then we also have the Chardonnay and rosé. And then just to tantalize the senses, we'll be pouring our Meiomi Brut Sparkling. That is our inaugural vintage. Just to kind of get it out there in the market, I think it will be available in Canada in the fall, but it'll be really fun to give people the opportunity to taste it.
I'm glad you're bringing the rosé.
Yeah, so Meiomi meaning coastal, we want to, remain on the coast, and we source the fruit from Sonoma County, Monterey County, and Santa Barbara County. The rosé is predominantly Pinot Noir with a little bit of Grenache, so those are varieties that show beautifully on the coast in this sort of maritime climate. We wanted to create a little bit more of a Provençal, sort of quiet wine. And this has a lot of berry to it. It has a lot of that sort of salivaceous acidity that you can find fruit that's grown along the coast as well. So, it's sourced from similar vineyards that the main Pinot Noir blend is sourced from, but we make it in two separate ways. We bring it in and we bring it into the press and directly press it. We also do something called saignée, where we're sort of bleeding off of a Pinot Noir fermenter and separately fermenting that juice in a tank.
Melissa Stackhouse, the winemaker at Meiomi Wines, is your Pinot Noir a blend of several areas?
Actually, the Pinot Noir and the Chardonnay and the Rosé are all tri-county.
Okay.
So, all that fruit sourced from Sonoma County, Monterey County, Santa Barbara County.
How many different clones?
Oh, boy, multiple clones of Pinot Noir for sure. Dijon clones and then quite a lot of the selections for sure. Same with the Chardonnay. Quite a lot of clones in the Chardonnay as well.
She's Melissa Stackhouse. She is the winemaker at Meiomi Wines. And this is the start of the Vancouver International Wine Festival, but we would have talked to her anyway on any given day because you want to catch up with the people who are making your favorite wines. The new sparkling, what kicked the new sparkling off? Was that a trend that you saw coming years ago, or was it just time for a brut?
I think it was time. I mean, it really makes sense. You know, sparkling is often crafted out of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay and, you know, maybe a little Pinot Meunier. So it just made sense that because we're sourcing from the coast and we're predominantly sourcing Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, that we would make a Meiomi sparkling. And fortunately, with my 4 years of experience at Jay Vineyards and Winery, it just seemed to, you know, kind of jive, just sort of taking that experience and doing something a little bit different for Meiomi. It's super exciting. Love making a method champenoise sparkling wine for Meiomi. And then just in 2018, I will say, I won't have any at the Vancouver Festival, but we're also producing a Brut Rosé. So that will be out next year around autumn. So
no.
It'll be going entourage here.
No, bring a
yeah,
bottle.
Yeah, it'll be
no.
going entourage here shortly.
Okay, fine. Okay.
Well, it's not even entourage yet. It's in its rawest form. It needs to lay down in bottle and think about what it's going to be when it grows up. So
Melissa Stackhouse, the winemaker at Meiomi Wines, and she is going to be at the Vancouver International Wine Festival. Tell me about the Meiomi brand that's going to work with Vancouver food. Do you know what we're like here? I know it's been a while since you might have been here, but which wine do you think is going to be that comfort with Vancouver?
Well, when I think about the Pinot Noir, in just sort of the bigness and the fatness of the Pinot Noir, it's a wine that's extremely textural. So I think about, you know, kind of like pairings. So taking a really rich wine and serving it with a very rich food. Vice versa, I think because of that rosé, is just very quiet and clean and crisp. To me, that goes perfectly with, like, you know, a seafood salad or, you know, just something really simple like a ceviche or, you know, even just some light cheeses. I think that would be a perfect pairing. So both these wines are very versatile, I think, for different reasons. I think when it comes to food and wine pairings in general, we just can't fret too much about it. We just need to try it.
Thank you, Melissa. Thank you very much. Looking forward to the Brut Rosé.
All right.
Food, wine, and friends. It doesn't get any better. You're listening to Tasting Room Radio, a celebration of all three with your host, Terry David Mulligan.
As promised at the top of the show, Tom Gore has joined us here on Tasting Room Radio, and he's coming to Vancouver. Where have I found you, Tom?
I'm in Russian River Valley down here in Sonoma County right now.
Doing what you do?
Doing what I do, yeah. I was just checking on a new development and some Chardonnay that we have down here we're going to prune this week.
Are you bringing your cabs? I assume you're bringing your cabs to the Vancouver Wine Festival. What else? Any surprises?
No, we're bringing our whole lineup of wines that we make. We make a total of 5 wines, Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, and Cabernet. And then we do 2 reserve wines, which a reserve Cabernet and a field blend, which is a combination of mostly Petit Verdot and Malbec, Tempranillo, Carignan, Merlot, and Cab. So it's a blend of a whole bunch of red wines that kind of balance out, really make a nice wine.
That's your field blend, right?
Yep.
I'm a field blend guy. I don't know what it is about field. I mean, I was intrigued by field blends because is it such a hit and miss thing? Are you kind of going to be surprised at the end of this blend if it's the first time through?
I mean, I think it's a little bit different every year, but the reality is we play with the percentages just a little bit, but you really get an opportunity to find balance with a variety, with a bunch of different varieties. So if one variety has an off year or whatever, you have all these other ones that are kind of in there. And I really like it because, again, you can really work on finding balance and mouthfeel, balance and flavor with all these different varieties going on at the same time. It's really an opportunity to showcase what happens when a bunch of different varieties are together in one bottle.
So let me go back on that. So it's Cab, Malbec, Merlot, Tempranillo, Petit Verdot?
Petit Verdot. And Carignan.
Carignan.
Or Carignan.
Yeah. Field blend.
Yeah.
How much do you make of it?
We make about 1,500 cases of both of the reserve wines, and then the higher volume wines are the ones that you see in all the stores, and that's the Cabernet, the Chardonnay, and the Sauvignon Blanc.
What's your earliest memory of being surrounded by fruit, by vineyards? Because you're a kid. I mean, kids got so many things they could do. What's your first memory?
My aunt tells me that I took her out into the vineyard when I was about 2.5 or 3 years old, and when there was a crew that was grafting the variety onto the top of the rootstocks, and apparently I was telling her what the crew was doing, but I don't quite remember that. But I think I remember going to work with my dad. You know, it was like the only time I was allowed to have a sip of coffee, and he always took me somewhere cool for breakfast, and we'd run around and check on all the crews and taste grapes, and or if it was frost protection, he'd take me out at night, and we would run the frost machines, and I just, I've worked every harvest since I was 7, so I've got a lot of really good memories, mostly being around my dad and my brother and my family, and coming up, you know, just being around grapes and wine and the whole thing.
What's the best advice your father ever gave you?
The best wine you'll ever have is one you want to have another glass of. I mean, my dad gave me a lot of good advice, and he's got a lot of one-liners, but that was one of the ones that I probably take into my career. I think it's about keeping things touchable and right in front of you and respecting everybody for what they like. And it's about what you want as a person and what makes you smile, and not about any level of pretentiousness or projecting on somebody what they might want.
Tom Gore Vineyards. Tell me, did anything change? What changed with you, in you, when your name went on the label?
I don't know I hope not a lot changed, because I think I'm still the same guy that's kicking dirt out here in the field. What I'm most proud of is being able to tell the story of farming in a wine, and that just farming and being out in the dirt was my passion, and raising these different varieties and different climates and tasting them all the way through is something that I've done my whole career. I've worked with amazing wines, but really being able to take the story of where the grapes come from out into markets and talk to folks about it, I think, is what I'm most proud of.
Okay. He's my kind of winemaker, my friends. He's a grower first. He's a farmer. Then he's a winemaker. Tom Gore Vineyards. And I see that they're billing this whole thing as Icons and Young Guns. Do you feel like a young gun?
Well, I mean, not every morning, but I hope so.
I relate to that. Is this your first?
You know, most mornings I'd say yes to that question.
Is this your first time in Vancouver?
It's my second time in Vancouver, but it's my first time to the wine festival.
Okay.
I love the city. It's an amazing city. I'm excited to come up there and talk to all the folks that are coming to the festival. It's going to be, I think, a great time. You know, all that I've heard is going to be a bunch of real good wines out there and good folks. So I'm excited to see everybody.
Let me go full circle, if I can, Tom Gore, back to your father. Are the wines that you make different from what your father was making? And would he approve of everything you're doing?
I hope so. You know, I think about him a lot when I'm making the wines. I think that he kind of taught me to take grapefruit and get out of its way and let those wines kind of shine through. And so I would like to say that there's some element to that in the wines that in each of the wines that we're making, and that we're trying to really source the right fruit in the right place and grow it there and, you know, have winemaking that really shows off what some of the best fruit grown in California can taste like. And I'm really proud of the wines that we've launched. I'm really proud that they're reasonable and that you can get a good glass of wine for a fair price.
There you go. Someone said that you represent the new California. Whatever California wines are going to be will be carried forward on people like you, the shoulders like you. First of all, do you accept that challenge? And secondly, what does it mean for the future of California wine?
Well, I think California's got a bright future with wine, no matter what my involvement is with that. I mean, it's a very special place with a lot of diversity and a lot of different growing regions. And I think that there's still a lot to learn and develop. And I think that'll be something that I look forward to at this show is also tasting what other people have going on. I'm glad that I have an opportunity to tell my story and to share wine with folks. But really, I think that California is an amazing spot. And just about the time you think you got it all figured out, you find a whole bunch of more cool stuff going on in terms of wine and new varieties that people are growing and little spots where it's all popping up. And so I think that's going to be one of the things for me at the festival, is to get out there and see what everybody's doing and enjoy it.
All right. Take us through the pour again that you're bringing.
We're bringing Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, and Cabernet, and then our two reserve wines, which are Cabernet Sauvignon and Field Blend.
Where's the rosé, Tom?
No, well, maybe someday, but we're going to stick to these ones for a while here.
Where's the bubble, Tom?
Oh, I love me some bubbles. Point me in the right direction when I'm up there, but I haven't started making the flight yet.
Okay, any surprises?
You know, I don't know. You tell me, how's the weather going to be when I'm up there?
Well, like you, you're wet. You got, I mean, you get a lot of snow. You're not going to be in drought conditions this coming year. But same thing here. We're just all just waiting. I just thought maybe you had something under the table that you were going to pour.
Oh, maybe if we got something that's from an older vintage, maybe we'll do that. But those are the wines that we're going to be bringing.
Okay, fine. Thank you, Tom, and have yourself a great season. You know that.
Yeah, I will. And thank you very much for having me on, and look forward to seeing everybody up there.
Okay. You being the young gun, you must be Facebooking and Instagramming and websiting. What do you got?
Yeah, we have Tom Gore Vineyards on Facebook and Instagram, and then our website is www.tomgorevineyards.com. There we go.
Congratulations, Tom. Well done.
All right. Thank you.
Tom Gore. Tom Gore Wines. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Bench 1775. Bench 1775 will be pouring at Flourish at Vancouver Community College Wednesday, March the 13th, and then will be part of the Naramata Bench Wineries Association Pour in Victoria for Rewind Wednesday, April 24th. All the details at bench1775.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. It's the year of the pig, and pigs they got. Look for Screaming Frenzy Pinot, and if your favorite store doesn't have it, yell at them till they get it in. Pigs, Pinot pigs. It's The Hatch. Welcome to Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. His name is Joel Peterson, and I am absolutely thrilled to call him a friend, a long-distance friend, but a friend nonetheless. Hello, Joel. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Terry. That's a high compliment. I consider you a friend, too. Also a long-distance friend. But, you know, one of those things where when you talk to each other, you immediately start up where you left off.
Sure,
that's
you
the
did.
Best kind of friend.
So, and I see that you're coming, first of all, to the 41st Annual Vancouver International Wine Festival. We'll talk about that in a moment. You're pouring the Teldesky Vineyard Zinfandel Dry Creek Valley 2014. Is that what you're bringing? Because that's what the notes tell me.
Well, that is, in fact, what I'm bringing. I am pouring that. It's part of our mailer up there. We have the 2016 Old Vine Zinfandel and the 2014 Teldesky. But I am also doing a seminar called The Godfather of Zinfandel. And so I'm pouring a wide range of my Zins in that particular event. I've noticed that my media people do interesting things. They have a listing of all the wines I'm going to pour, and they've got Pickberry as a Zinfandel. Actually, Pickberry is a Bordeaux blend from the heights of Sonoma Mountain.
Right.
But everything else is Zinfandel, and I've got not only Teldesky, but I've got Belloni, and I've got Barisha, we've got Sonoma County and Mendocino, and we're even pouring Vintner's Blend, which is the ubiquitous wine I make.
Wow. Has it changed at all? I mean, I knew it was an instant hit when you made Vintner's Blend and really helped to build the winery, Ravenswood. Has it changed at all, or is it exactly as it was?
Well, you know, every vintage changes a little bit, but it's pretty much exactly as it was. We make it the same way. We approach it the same way. A little bit of oak, a little bit of thyme in the barrel, lots of old vineyards. I mean, they are old vines. The average age of the vine is about 50 years old. So we're still making it pretty much the same way, you know. And my philosophy doesn't allow me to make wines that are identical. That's too much like, quote, winemaking.
And they can't be wimpy. No wimpy wines.
No wimpy wines. You know, you definitely want them to be what they are. Kind of like Einstein is no wimpy scientist, and Barisha is like, Baryshnikov is like no wimpy ballet dancer.
If they're
exactly what they're supposed to be.
His name is Joel Peterson, and he is the man behind Ravenswood. And it was you, Joel, who turned me on to ZAP so many years ago, the Zinfandel Producers Association. And I thought it was when I walked into that room at the base at on the beach, I thought all of the drummers from rock and roll had showed up at once.
It is true. It's a room full of rock stars, really. People, at least in the wine business.
But they don't march to anybody else. They're different. They want to make different wine, and they have a different a wine to say and different speech to say, and they're just not like the other winemakers. What is that about Zin makers?
I think it's because Zinfandel allows you to do so many possible things, and it's a real chameleon when it comes to terroir. It changes itself radically from, you know, the Sierra foothills, the Sonoma Valley, to Napa, to Russian River, you know, to Paso Robles. So by the very nature of getting involved with this grape that is highly specific to its location and with lots of old vines that are very unique in their flavor profiles, winemakers who choose to do this tend to be kind of like on the cutting edge of the periphery, if you were. You know, lots of Cabernet taste pretty much the same. Chardonnay, you know, it's all about winemaking, how much oak you put in and how much oak you don't. But with Zinfandel, it is very much about the unique location and requires kind of a unique personality to work with it.
How many punch-ups do you get in a year with a Chardonnay maker?
Oh, I do my fair share.
I bet you do. Joel Peterson, the Godfather of Zin. Here's what you need to know, you, the audience, about Zinfandel, especially if you haven't tasted any or you because you've never been introduced to it. Here's the deal. This Teldesky Dry Creek 2014, it's just got blueberries, it's got blackberry, dark fruit, dark chocolate, black pepper. Everything is, even the liquid is pitch black. It's fantastic. And on the other side, the old fine Zinfandel 2016, has got blueberries and blackberries and natural vanilla, a little calmer, a little gentler, baking spice, the kind of thing. So you choose which direction you wish to go. But there are only two of the many that Ravenswood makes. I love the way Zin ages. But I've only had Zins that have been 5, 6, 7 years. What does a 10-year Zin taste like, Joel?
Oh, my. I'm glad you asked that question. Ravenswood has one of the best old collections ever. We have a library that goes back into the 80s, actually. Mm. And so I could pull out, for instance, that first Teldesky I made or a Belloni from the early 90s. So right now, I've been drinking and tasting wines from the early 90s, actually the 90s decade. And honestly, they are spectacular. They have this secondary perfume that goes with them. They take on a spiciness that they didn't have initially. And they kind of come together in ways that you can only get by having a wine in the bottle for as long as these have been in the bottle. So roses, you can still get some of the berries. These wines have great acidity, so they're still fresh on the palate. And they just sort of sit there in the glass, and they change, and they change, and they change. It's like having a really interesting conversation with somebody who's really wise.
Joel Peterson, the Godfather of Zin. So you're coming to do some seminars. You're talking about the Godfather of Zin. What are the other ones?
I'm part of a larger seminar on California wines.
It's Growing Forward in California. That's your first one. Zinfandel on the world stage.
Yes. Zinfandel on the world stage. I have done a lot of that. I've had the good fortune to be able to sell Zinfandel in many parts of the world. As you might imagine, it's a favorite in the Scandinavian countries. I just got back from a trip to Japan where it's much loved. And I should not forget to mention Canada, because Canada is a great place. People in Canada love Zinfandel. They've embraced it in very good ways. Yeah, and not surprisingly, Zinfandel is one of those big red wines that people who live in cooler places tend to like a lot.
Have you noticed how polite we are?
Very, very polite.
Tell me about your history with the Vancouver International Wine Festival.
Oh, my gosh. I've been coming to the Vancouver International Wine Festival for a long time. Not every year, but it's one of those places where you get really professional people putting it on. You have great people that you get to work with. I mean, just the other winemakers, lots of people I get to see that I don't always see that are fun to talk to. And you get those really polite Canadians that come and who love to drink wine. So okay. it's a great festival, and it's in a great place. Vancouver is one of my favorites.
Our guest has been Joel Peterson. This is how good he is and how dedicated he's been. He's been inducted into the Vintners Hall of Fame. His original Punchdown is now in the Smithsonian, probably his rubber boots as well. And here's my comparison, and we're going to go all the way back to music. I compare Zinfandel, a well-made Zinfandel, like the Teldesky that you're going to be pouring from Dry Creek Valley, with its blackberry and blueberries and licorice and dark chocolate and black pepper. I compare it to like standing in front of Tower of Power. You're trying to figure out if you follow the Chester Thompson on the keys, the drummer, the horn section, the sax player, the vocalists. Who do you follow in that band in order to get the whole of it? I mean, you are the Tower of Power of wine.
That is very high praise. I could, wow. I don't even have a response for that, Derry.
And when you're
that's an amazing way of looking at the Dry Creek Zin for sure. And Tower of Power has always been one of my favorites.
Thank you very much, Joel, and have a great time at the Vancouver National Wine Festival. I'll see you there.
Thank you, Terry. I look forward to seeing you.
Joel Peterson, the Godfather of Zin.
You're listening to Tasting Room Radio with your host, Terry David Mulligan.
And we welcome back Mark DeVere, who is the master of wine and represents and speaks for Mondavi in Napa Valley in California. And in fact, I guess by the very nature of this 41st, Mark, that you'll also be speaking on behalf of Geneviève Shanson, who is chief winemaker.
Indeed, I will be. And in fact, Geneviève will be joining us in Vancouver for the first time this year, too.
It's an interesting point, Mark, about the ongoing history of Mondavi, the ups and downs, the highs and lows, mostly highs, I might add. When Geneviève was hired to work on Opus 1, it wasn't the Rothschilds that hired her. It was Robert Mondavi.
That's right. Well, it is an interesting story. And in fact, you mentioned it's the 41st year or 41st Vancouver Wine Festival. Geneviève was actually hired by Robert Mondavi to work at Robert Mondavi Winery in 1978. So same time as the Wine Festival, around about the same time as Vancouver Wine Festival was hired. And it was because she was originally a young French intern, but when the Opus One partnership formed, she was in the perfect position because she knew the vineyards in Oakville, she knew the Robert Mondavi Winery, she knew the Mondavi family, and she spoke French, of course, and had trained in Bordeaux. So she got the role, as it were, originally in some ways as, I don't want to say, just a translator, obviously much more than that.
Much more than that.
But she was the perfect interpreter of visions, let me say.
And what might be lost in some of the history, because there's a lot of it with Mondavi, and that is that, that Robert was absolutely fascinated by Burgundy and Bordeaux and the Loire Valley and the makers who grew, the growers who grew there, the winemakers who worked there, what they did with their fruit, how they grew the soil, the terroir. He studied it. It was an open class for him. And then he brought back all the lessons that he learned and applied it to Napa.
Well, it's a great strategy if you're starting somewhere where you know you're doing okay, but you know there's a huge opportunity. And that was, of course, Mr. Mondavi's vision. He recognized that there was so much opportunity for Napa Valley in the 1960s when there were wines being made here and there were some good wines being made here. But he knew there was so much better opportunity. So indeed, just as you said, traveling around France, traveling around Burgundy and the Loire and Bordeaux and trying to work out what they were doing differently and how we could take some of their learning and in many ways synthesize what different people were doing and do it even better, we hope. And I think the learning spread back to France subsequently in many ways too. And you mentioned Opus One. I think that was a great example of a symbiosis where both sides learn from each other.
He is Mark DeVere. He's a master of wine, and he is representing Mondavi around the world, but also very specifically at the 41st Annual Vancouver International Wine Festival. And Geneviève, it's her first time here. So I'm going to ask the question that your memories. First of all, what were you able to tell her about the Vancouver International Wine Festival? And what did Robert impart? Because, you know, he was the first winery to show up. He was literally the first winemaker to walk into the room 41 years ago. And so I'm kind of wondering, that history aside, what did you learn anything from Robert about his relationship with Vancouver? And have you passed that on to Geneviève?
Well, that's one of the things I did pass on to her. I was talking to her earlier this week and excited about going to Vancouver, and she did not know that Robert Mondavi Winery and Ms. Mondavi started the Vancouver Wine Festival. Literally the first, as you say, the first year, I believe, was only Robert Mondavi Winery. So we have a long connection and a long affection for the Vancouver Wine Festival and for Vancouver in general, because as some people have pointed out, you know, we're well known, the connection and the inspiration that Mr. Mondavi helped infuse energy into Napa Valley. Some people have been kind enough to suggest that Vancouver, which to me has such an amazing food and wine scene these days, that when Mr. Mondavi started the wine festival or provided the first wine festival, in some ways that was part of the spark and part of bringing energy to the gastronomic scene and the amazing wine and food scene that you have in Vancouver now. So I like to think that in a small way, there's a small bit of credit that goes to Mr. Mondavi for that.
Mark DeVere, Master of Wine, Mondavi Wines, of course, from California. Your portfolio is large and wide. But the Cab Reserve 2015, as usual, great texture, great balance from the Tokalon Vineyard. It's beautiful first growth and consistent, yes?
Yes. Well, Tokalon is the vineyard right behind Robert Mondavi Winery, and that's no accident. Mr. Mondavi built his winery there because that site had been famous in the 19th century for making really world-class wines. And even though during Prohibition it maybe fell slightly off the radar and there weren't great wines made in the early years after Prohibition from that site, but it's a, as it were, the old-timers knew that that was one of the most reliable sites to grow world-class wines, and especially Cabernet Sauvignon. So Mr. Mondavi put his winery on that site because he knew the potential of this vineyard. So we're really fortunate to have it. And as you say, it's not just the balance of power and complexity and elegance that we can get in great vintages, but the word you use, the consistency year after year of being able to produce what we hope you will agree, a beautiful terroir-driven wines that really express the Royal Mondavi winery style.
Mark DeVere, Master of Wine, Mondavi Wines, of course, from California. I have to tell the audience, and I think I've said it a couple of times, that the other pour that I know that you're going to be bringing to Vancouver is this astonishing Cab Franc from Oakville. I love the Cab Franc from British Columbia, but this is completely different. This might as well be made on the other side of Mars. It's so different from what we know here. It's powerful.
It's beautiful, isn't it? I'm so glad you have it. We're pretty excited about it. We don't make much of it. We have always grown Cabernet Franc on Tokelon, and it's always been, as it were, I don't want to call it the secret ingredient because it's never been a secret, but it's always been sort of the magic ingredient in the reserve Cabernet Sauvignon and some of our other top blends. In the U.S., it's only made available to fine dining restaurants, or if you come to visit the winery, it's available, and a small amount for special export markets like British Columbia. It is very specifically Tokelon Cabernet Franc, but it's a beautiful wine. In fact, some people would give Mr. Mondavi credit for being one of the first pioneers of Cabernet Franc, even though he didn't ever bottle one as Cabernet Franc in his lifetime. But the very first vintage of Cabernet Sauvignon, the, what we now call the Reserve, in 1966, was 10% Cabernet Franc from Tokelon.
Are you bringing any Fumé?
We'll definitely have some Fumé Blanc. We, as you know, Fumé Blanc very closely tied to the Royal Mondavi Winery story. We'll have our 2017 Napa Valley Fumé Blanc, which is largely from our vineyard in the Stag's Leap District, which gives beautiful lemon-lime zestiness. And then about a third of the fruit does, in fact, come from the Tokelon Vineyard in Oakville, which gives a lovely richness and roundness. But definitely stop by and try our Fumé Blanc.
Mark DeVere and Genevieve Janssens, chief winemaker, Robert Mondavi Winery, will be representing California and, in particular, Mondavi at the 41st Annual Vancouver International Wine Festival. You can find them at Discovery Robert Mondavi Winery and RMW, A Visionary Journey. There's lots to discover. Thank you, Mark, for this, and I look forward to seeing you on the tasting room floor.
I look forward to it. Thank you so much, Terry.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch. It's the year of the pig. And pigs they got. Look for Screaming Frenzy Pinot. And if your favorite store doesn't have it, yell at them till they get it in. Pigs, Pinot, Pinot pigs. It's The Hatch. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. They're expanding their restaurant for renovations and a sunroom. The restaurant would be closed from February the 18th and will reopen mid-April, just in time for the new wine releases. All the details can be found at unsworthvineyards.com. Okay, Curtis Gold talking about the 41st Annual Vancouver International Wine Festival. Now, let's talk about the 41st Annual Vancouver International Wine Festival, which happens literally in days. California, very popular choice to the theme region.
Yeah, and it makes sense. The very first wine festival was just one supplier. It was Robert Mondavi, it makes sense for it to come full circle. Mondavi's had such an influence globally, New World and, you know, parts of the Old World as well with influence. And it's great that, you know, them, you know, along with the other almost 200 wineries from around the world. But Mondavi is going to be back with Mark DeVere, Master of Wine, who's an incredible ambassador for them. And Genevieve, their lead winemaker, who is brilliant. You know, they have some phenomenal wines coming out of that Tokelon Vineyard, which is, you know, your Grand Cru, California.
Did I tell you about the Cab Franc?
No.
Changed my life.
Oh, you didn't share it with me.
Oh, I must have missed that. It's fantastic.
I must have just not checked my mail that day.
It's fantastic.
Yes. But, you know, they've been on top of the world for good reason. And then, you know, I think there's just a lot of good opportunity to explore other producers, you know, some smaller ones. Trefethen, always a big fan of them as well. And then you have people pioneering in their own ways. Ridge Vineyards, you know, doing a lot of work organic, listing full ingredients on their bottles, single vineyard selection and all that. So there's a lot to play around with in California. And we can't think of it as just one region. You know, the state is the size, or bigger than many countries. And so there's different climates, different styles that we should be looking at.
Do you know why it's a great idea that California is the theme region as well? Because they've gone through pestilence. They've gone through fires and floods and earthquakes and carnage of mammoth proportions. And if we could help them out, it'd be a good thing.
No, absolutely. And, you know, I think when a lot of us are learning or just coming to wine, we go to California first. It's familiar. We recognize the place names. We can pronounce them, you know, and then we a lot of times move on. And then for many of us, Europe comes second, French wine, Italian. And then I think that some people make the mistake of not looking back at where they first kind of got their chops. And there's a lot of great things, a lot of initiatives, particularly on a sustainable, organic, maybe biodynamic level going on in California. And really, we have this kinship being on the coast with them.
Do you know who I'm thrilled to see here is Ray Signorello.
Ray Signorello.
Who lost his entire winery.
He did in fires a couple of years back, but local boy done well. And, you know, he understands this market. He lives in this market, but it also splits his time living down in California. And his white, the Sauvignon Blanc Semillon blend that I'm blanking on the name is...
It's his mom's name, wasn't it?
Yes. And, okay, now you're double downing on me sucking for not recalling...
I'm your editor.
The name, yes. Brilliant stuff and wines of time and place and, fantastic products and you know, really resonates with the local market here.
I tell you who I'm really looking forward to tasting again is Aquilini. Aquilini Red Mountain was pouring here in 41st.
Yeah, you know, again, can we talk local boys done well? Aquilini, you know, Red Mountain, a coveted AVA appellation down in Washington State. And wines with incredible power yet finesse at the same time. And I think that a lot of people are not familiar with them, and it'll be exciting. And especially when you can, you know, Washington State wines, we all have a general idea. But to get specific about that appellation, Red Mountain, what makes it so special? And, you know, it's a really good chance to be in there. And then, you know, we can all... also at the table lend our advice of what we think, you know, Canuck's upcoming trades should be with the Aquilini family.
And how much will this be in the club seats? And of course we have a wine royalty coming, Jean-Charles Boisset and Gina Gallo.
Gina Gallo, you know, again, powerful family. And, you know, this is the big thing about the Vancouver International Wine Festival, that you, it's not just local reps pouring stuff, which would be great enough, but you have principals from the winery, and we're not talking about, you know, someone from the tasting room being shoved up here. This is Genevieve, you know, head winemaker at Mondavi. You have Gina Gallo, you know, family proprietor of Gallo, and so... these, for many, are once-in-a-lifetime opportunities to press the flesh and, you know, and glean knowledge from these people.
If you're a fan of, say, Kendall Jackson, or if you're a fan of Ravenswood, to have the guy that actually made it, Joel Peterson, and Randy Ullum pour for you and tell you about this bottle of wine... Mm-hmm. There's nothing better.
And what I love is when you're talking to them, you know, they do this thing all the time. They've been doing it for years. They've been doing it for a generation and a half, right? And the fact that they're still so excited, you see that passion that they have. And that's what I really love about WineFest or events like this, that you're going to them and you say, oh, my God, they still love it. That, no wonder they have that staying power and they're sticking around and they're still, you know, pushing the bar upward because they love it. They get it, and they're sharing their enthusiasm.
Okay, I want you to think about this for a second, Curtis, and that is that one recommendation that was eat before you go, but one recommendation if you have from all of your times at the wine festival, Harry Hershick, while you're thinking, Harry Hershick told me about the Sandra Ofield method, and that is that Sandra goes directly into the wine store and looks for the blue dots, which means they're the wines that are not available in Canada currently, and then she goes and tastes the blue dots. Yeah. How about you? What would you do?
Okay, recommendations. This is kind of a paying it forward thing, but when you get your sip, you've had a little chat, and you're kind of enjoying the way you had that moment to with it by yourself, step out of the way, let others forward, move forward. That is just my biggest thing, because we've all been behind those people who are just, you know, taking selfies and everything, and you can do that elsewhere, and the room just moves so much better. But, you know, I would say... have a plan. You know, the wine festival, the list of wineries is online, and make some you want to hit. And because, you know, I've been going to this festival for probably 25 years now, and every year I don't follow my own advice. I don't make a plan of wineries I want to hit, and I get caught in some, whatever, and then the wine fest is over, and it's like there's about a good dozen that I missed and I never got the chance, and then I have envy of everyone else who did. So follow the my advice, even though I don't.
And I'll share this with you. I have a problem. Inevitably, there'll be one guy, it's always a guy, will walk up to the tasting bar, and he might be looking at Joel Peterson, and he say, "The wife wants a red." It's like he's at a wedding or a bar mitzvah.
Right.
Come on.
Yes.
Come on.
Fair enough. Ask questions, and like you were saying earlier, just listen. It's a great opportunity to learn. And, you know, I think the biggest thing is also don't stick with your favorites. If you have a certain variety or country that you like sticking to, move out. You know, this is the opportunity. You have a couple thousand wines in these room that you're going to have a chance to try. And so this is when you have the opportunity to broaden your horizons. So if you're normally a Merlot drinker from the New World, great, awesome, try a bunch, but then move on from that and experiment with other varieties and countries.
Okay. I have one final question. Hold on a second. What was it? Oh, it was really good. Oh, my God. Oh. Okay, Curtis Gold talking about the 41st Annual Vancouver International Wine Festival.
You're listening to Tasting Room Radio with your host, Terry David Mulligan.
Matt Landry is the general manager and the sommelier at Stable House, and he has been declared, through a very hard vetting process, Sommelier of the Year. Congratulations. Now, the 41st Annual Vancouver International Wine Festival is right around the corner. What would you give as a primer to anybody who's attending, what to watch for in that big tasting room?
First advice, eat a hearty meal before you go, because it's going to be a long night. But I think California's the theme is great, because you get to try stuff that I think for most of us we're priced out of on a day-to-day basis.
Or not available,
yeah. So I think this is the time to try the legends. I think, you know, you try Stag's Leap Wine Cellars, and try, I think Heights is there, I believe. Ridge, you know, those people, like the icons, I think you don't really get to drink on a day-to-day basis. Those are the ones you should hit up for sure.
Okay. Matt Landry, who's a Sommelier of the Year.
Food, wine, and friends. It doesn't get any better. You're listening to Tasting Room Radio, a celebration of all three, with your host, Terry David Mulligan.
Christy Linnebo, the Sommelier at L'Abattoir, and Kelsey Jones, Sommelier at Chambord. Let's talk about the 41st Annual Vancouver International Wine Festival, which is just a gong show. How much do you attend? Do you go to the seminars, or do you just want to get into that tasting room?
Yeah, there's a few seminars that we were both talking about, how we both wanted to attend a couple seminars, but they're overlapping. So one of us is going to go to one, and the other is going to the other.
I'm going to tag team.
Yeah, I'm going to go to Unexpected California this year to learn about some of the different things happening in California, being the theme of the festival this year. But it's at the same time as the event you're attending,
which is the Symposium on Canada's Place in the World Market. I get really excited about wine business and hearing other people talk about the market. So we're going to report back to each other after that. And then I think we'll both be in the tasting room.
Yeah, I'm attending an event with John Bonnet here at Chambord that Kelsey's hosting, which is really exciting. We're hosting a dinner at L'Abattoir that I will be leading. It's with the Wines of Croatia. There's the awards lunch that we always go to and the trade tasting. It's definitely a busy time for us.
And then you want to taste as well? And when you get in the big room, what is it like? Because you know, there's the Sandra Ofield method, which is go into the store, find the blue dots of the wines that are not available in British Columbia, and then go taste them.
I like that. I like that method. I'm going to take Sandra's ticket.
It always becomes such a social event, though, so you definitely need to have a plan. Otherwise, you get stuck
chatting with everybody.
You have to have a plan, and then you realize you get about halfway through and you've tossed the plan out.
This is actually a crucial time for spitting, too, because it's so easy to be talking to someone, something's delicious, and then all of a sudden you've swallowed most of the wine you've tasted.
Yeah, I know there's wine from Romania this year. I don't think I've ever had a wine from Romania before. There's those Croatian wines. I was just recently on a trip to Portugal, and one of the wineries, Herda de Servas, that I went and visited in Alentejo, they're going to be there. So lots of fun stuff to check out.
And you've seen the list of wineries coming from California, I assume. Is there any one that you want to recommend?
There's a seminar on Zinfandel, and the true kings of Zinfandel, Ridge, are coming. And for a long time, I didn't really think that was a grape for me until I had Ridge's Zinfandel. So I would say that is my number one California winery that I want everybody to try if they haven't had it before.
Ridge is amazing. Absolutely. That's up there for me, too. I was in Napa Valley 2 years ago now, and one of the wineries was Trefethen, which definitely focuses on sustainability and biodynamic practices.
And family.
I really loved all of their wines, so I'm excited to see them this year, and I encourage people to check them out.
Okay, I have one. I got a chance to try Mondavi Cab Franc.
Ah, Mondavi,
and I'm telling you now, I have never tasted anything so powerful and big in all my life. And if you get a chance to taste it, it's one of those blue dots.
That sounds really exciting. I am a self-professed lover of Cab Franc. It is probably also my favorite BC grape. And yeah, not something you see as 100% variety very often from California.
And one that expresses itself differently based on where it's grown. Like our BC Cab Franc is very different from the Loire Valley Cab Franc or California. So yeah, that's definitely one to check out.
Kelsey Jones from Chambord. Christy Lindebaugh from L'Abattoir on Tasting Room Radio.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. They're expanding their restaurant for renovations and a sunroom. The restaurant would be closed from February the 18th and will reopen mid-April, just in time for the new wine releases. All the details can be found at unsworthvineyards.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Road 13, Canada's Winery of the Year. They're on winter hours right now until Easter weekend. Open Monday to Saturday from 1 to 4, close Saturdays and stat holidays. And they open for the summer on Easter weekend. And just a heads up to wine club members, the next shipment is in March, full of newly bottled releases. All the details at road13vineyards.com. My name is Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio. This is a very special segment of this show. Special how? How, Terry? Why is it? Because what are you doing? Are you having some royalty come through? Yes, we are. We're having film and wine royalty coming in, starting with Gary Cogill, who's a great friend of mine, film critic, film producer. We did junkets together for years and years and years, and I have found Gary in his palatial estate in Hawaii. Am I correct there so far, Gary?
You know, it's so large, I can barely find the phone. It is a palatial estate on the big island of Hawaii, where I think it snowed on Mauna Kea last night.
So that's
the ocean
crazy.
On one side. A mountain with snow on the other.
That's crazy. Are you ready for the Oscars?
I am. You know, and I'm a little troubled by the Oscars, Terry. They just keep trying to flail away and do all these different things, and then they keep backtracking. And actually, I'm glad they backtracked on everything. So we'll see how it turns out. But it's I'm a little disconcerted about the Oscars.
They didn't backtrack on the host, though, did they?
They didn't backtrack on that, and they probably should have found one. But we'll see how that works. Maybe that's better.
Maybe that's maybe
I have no idea until we see it. And it's certainly not the Kennedy Center honors.
That's true. She is from the land of three named people, Haley Hamilton Cogill. And you can find her at Dallas Uncorked if you go to Twitter and Instagram. But she's part and parcel of Cogill Wine and Film, which is a podcast that you really want to get your ears on. It's very cool. Haley, I know that you're a sommelier and that you're totally immersed in wine. You do a lot of travel, a lot of writing. Have you always tried to pair wines with film?
Since Gary and I have been together, I will say yes. I think it just kind of, this whole concept grew out of what we do around our dinner table. We love to talk about movies. We love to drink good wines. And really, from just kind of being so fully immersed in both, the pairing just became very natural.
The 41st Annual Vancouver International Wine Festival starts today, and the feature region is California. So if I get Gary to talk about his films and his acting Oscar picks, et cetera, et cetera, can we pair some of your wines with those films and choices?
I would love to, Terry. Thanks.
Okay.
Let's talk movies, Terry.
Okay, man.
Let's do the acting ones first.
A female.
So I'm looking at the female, and it's a really good year for females. I mean, look at The Favorite that had three women nominated. But you know what? Let's start with supporting actress. I think this is a shoe-in. It's Regina King for If Beale Street Could Talk. And I think this is a great performance in an understated, beautiful Barry Jenkins film. You know, he won the Oscar for Moonlight. But this is just a beautiful film about love and a relationship and racism. And Regina King is the mom. I think you hand her the Oscar this year for that film.
Wow. Holy cow.
Yeah, I do. I just don't think anybody, I think the two women, I mean, I love Emma Stone in The Favorite and Rachel Weisz, but I think you hand it to Regina King this year. I think she wins this hands down. And then for Best Actress,
you know,
I'm a huge Lady Gaga fan. I wish she would win, but I don't think she will. I don't at all. She tied in the Critics' Choice Awards, but you know, it's been going to Glenn Close. I don't know if it's a Lifetime Achievement Award, but she's great in The Wife. And I think you have to give it to her this year. If I were voting, I would vote Lady Gaga. That's a performance of the year for me, for a female. But I love A Star is Born, but A Star is Born is going to get overlooked a lot on Sunday. So let's just give it to Glenn Close, and let's all be happy this year because she's great in The Wife. And that's a difficult part, too.
And for the men?
The guys are interesting. So supporting actor, I think it's a shoe-in with Mahershala Ali, and I might be butchering his name a little bit. You know, he won for Moonlight, so he's going to win again for Green Book. Green Book's the kind of film, the more you watch it, the better it gets. And it's a simple film on its structure, on the basis, on the front, but he's great in it. And, of course, playing that classical musician tours the South during the Jim Crow era in America, and it's not easy with Viggo Mortensen by his side. But give it to Mahershala Ali. I love seeing Sam Elliott get nominated. Love seeing Richard E. Grant get nominated.
Yep.
But man, I think it's Mahershala, and I think it's Regina King.
Oh, take it to the...
All right, Best Actor, this is hard, because earlier I would have said that Christian Bale would win it for Vice, but all the momentum's going to Rami Malek for Bohemian Rhapsody.
And why?
If I were voting, I'd give it to Bradley Cooper, but he's not going to win this year. I think it's Rami Malek. I think all the momentum's with Bohemian Rhapsody, and it's a great performance. He carries that film, and it's just, that film is a joy to watch. It's a blast. It's kind of a mess, but it's a good mess, and it's a fun mess. So give it to Rami.
It's a good mess.
Give it to him.
Thank you, Gary. Gary Cogill, who is a film producer, film critic, and he knows what he's talking about. He does this a lot. Okay, Haley Hamilton Cogill. Haley, are you there?
I am, Terry.
Thank you, darling. I asked you to, if you would consider... Just pairing up a wine with all of the preamble that Gary gave us. And I noticed that you chose an Italian from Piedmont. Tell me about why that wine with that group.
Well, I'm going to give you, for Rami Malek's performance, you have to pair Queen with the Queen of Italian Wines, which is a Barbaresco, Marchese di Gressi, Martinega Vineyard Barbaresco, classic Italian Piemonte, earthy Nebbiolo. I just think that if you think that Barolo is the king of Italian wines, then the sister wine to that is Barbaresco. And it seems for the lead singer of Queen, that is the perfect pairing.
Yeah, it's old world wine if you think about the fact that they started in 1650.
Absolutely. And I, you know, Nebbiolo or good Barolo was kind of my aha wine. I think that the wines of the Piemonte region are just some of the most classic. You get all of these kind of savory balsamic notes, kind of dried cherry and almost like a sun-dried tomato kind of notes within them, with that great old world earthiness that is just very, very classic, textured, intense. You know, put hair on your chest kind of wine that I just find really, really intoxicating.
It is so sexy. Just even talking about it is so sexy. Marchese di Gressi, any idea what the price point is on that beauty?
I'm going to say that it's probably about $75.
Is that in real money?
That's in U.S.
Yeah, thanks. That's $200 in Canada. Okay, good.
Okay.
They are the Cogills, Gary Cogill, film critic and film producer, and Haley Hamilton Cogill on Twitter and Instagram at Dallas Uncorked, D Magazine wine and spirit editor. But really, Cogill Wine and Film is what you want to get your hands on. It's a great podcast. It's fantastic. And each and every week, except those weeks when Haley's not around and Gary has to carry the load. All right.
Which will be recently. Yeah.
Okay, let's get to director. Gary?
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think this is a shoo-in. I think you have to give this to Alfonso Cuarón for Roma. I think it's the best directed film of the year. That Bradley Cooper did a great job on Star is Born, but was not even nominated.
Right. And that bothered you, right?
Yeah. It bothered me a lot. Did it bother you?
Yep.
Yep. It just makes no sense. That film did not direct itself. Also, you have to give it to Alfonso, because when you just pay attention to Roma, it is so beautiful and so profound and so life-affirming in a really interesting way. It's about tragedy. It's also about just the daily nuances of life, of raising children, and in this case, the director being raised by his nanny and by his mother
right
after the father left. And so all of that, it's just beautiful. And, of course, he's the cinematographer. He'll win for that.
And the, screen, and the screenwriter.
I also think that film wins best picture. I think it's the best picture of the year. I'd give it to A Star is Born as the movie I want to watch over and over and over. But Roma is an accomplishment and quite a movie. And to me, profound if you just pay attention.
I was astonished by the passion involved in it until I had a chance to do an interview with Alfonso Cuarón for my podcast. And he said something that just stopped me. He said, I owed them, those women that raised me, I took them for granted. I didn't think about their lives or their times or how I was affecting their life. And when it finally dawned on me, I had this epiphany, this moment of truth, and I said, I have to make right by them. And that's why he shot that film.
Yeah, you know, I listened to your podcast and your interview with Alfonso, and I got chills when he said that to you. And I agree. And that movie reflects that. That movie is the perfect statement of what he said. And if we could all get a moment in our lives to pay homage to the people that, you know, brought us up, how amazing that we could do a statement even remotely as good as Alfonso did. That's the movie of the year, I think.
I think he's going to walk away with 3, 4, maybe 5 awards when it's said and done. Now, if Haley's about, so for Roma, you have a pairing that that has a story in California. It's an amazing story.
I could not have had a more perfect opportunity to pair this beautiful wine and what you just said about Alfonso, who actually brought tears to my eyes. And that's kind of the same story that I find in Rolando Herrera's wine, Mi Sueño, especially as we have a very weird situation in our country right now. And so a little backstory on Rolando. He is an immigrant to the United States. He moved with his family that were basically pickers and agriculture workers, mm-hmm. Moving up from Mexico through Southern California to eventually Northern California, where they settled in Napa and really were agriculture workers. And when his family said, okay, we need to go back to Mexico, he stayed. At the age of 13, he got a job as a dishwasher at Auberge du Soleil. He worked his way up. He started working for Warren Winarski when he was still in high school. Warren Winarski, who started Stag's Leap Wine Cellars. Warren was so impressed with him that he gave him a job kind of as a cellar rat, worked his way up to be their cellar master, was part of Paul Hobbs Consulting Company when he started it. And in the midst of that, in the mid-90s, started Mi Sueño as his own label. And it basically means my dream. And it's his American dream, this immigrant that came to our country who has risen to such incredible heights. The wines are gorgeous. He has an El Llano red blend that's kind of his homage to the village that he grew up in. And really, I think that just the beauty and the story of what Alfonso Cuarón did and paying homage to his, you know, the women that raised him, I think that Rolando does this beautifully in celebrating his history and where he's come from and really the story that he's created in California.
Rolando Herrera. So Roma's going to win.
Roma's going to win Best Director, Best Picture, I think. And I think for supporting actor, it's got to be Mahershala Ali. And for Best Actor, I think it's Rami Malek. But somebody else could sneak in there. But I think it's Rami Malek. And then for supporting actress, I think it's Regina King all the way. And Best Actress, I would vote for Lady Gaga, but I don't think she'll win this. I think it will be Glenn Close for The Wife.
The high point for me was Spike Lee.
Well, Spike Lee should have won the Oscar for Malcolm X.
Yep.
It wasn't even nominated. Malcolm X should have won Best Picture, and it didn't. Denzel Washington should have won Best Actor for Malcolm X, and didn't.
Okay.
And Spike's been around a long time, made some great films, and I love Black Klansman. I think it's loopy and funny and disturbing all at the same time.
Hey, tell people about the podcast and so they can find it.
It's called Cogill Wine and Film, A Perfect Pairing. It's on Revolver Podcast. You can also find it on Google or Spotify or iHeartRadio, kind of any place that you would listen to your podcast.
Okay, Haley, you know, I love the wines that you've recommended, but there's one more I want to ask you about.
Can I give you two more? Because Gary brought up something with your supporting actress, and I just think it would play well with all your California winemakers in town right now.
What do you mean Melka?
I want to give you Melka. I also want to give you a supporting actress pairing, if I could,
yep.
Because Barry Jenkins paints If Beale Street Could Talk, and this gorgeous golden hue that was so intentional. I think if you watch the film, you really see how vibrant the gold and the green kind of is layered in throughout the film.
The lighting.
And so just the lighting. The lighting is gorgeous. So for a golden hue of a film, it seems the perfect pairing would be Liquid Gold, which is Dolce, which is Barniente's late harvest, kind of Sauternes style sweet wine that is true liquid gold. It's so delicious. Apricot, lovely kind of stone fruit notes, just a really, really great dessert wine to have at the end of a meal, or even pairing with something like foie gras and you know, something like blue cheese or anything like that.
And really, I love that we're going to finish off with this, the Melka Estates. It's Philippe and Sherry Melka. I just did a big story on Aquilini Red Mountain. The Aquilinis, who own the Vancouver Canucks, they do a lot of things. And they have an Italian vineyard in the family, have done for years. But there was a huge bidding war on the last 670 acres of Red Mountain in Washington State. And they went in at the last minute and bought the entire 670 acres. And these are they're just starting to pour the first wines. Wow. It's really not their fruit, but this is how they want their wines to smell and taste. And they're just going to be pouring this week in Vancouver at the Vancouver International Wine Festival. And they had all of the money in the world to hire the best grower, and they hired Philippe Melka.
Philippe is a rock star. I adore him. He's a character. He's a surfer. He's one of my favorite human beings in the world. And he is uber talented. He makes some of the finest wines in California. Now it sounds like we'll also be making wine in Washington. But he's, you know, behind Lael and Brand and Vineyard 29 and Donna Estates and all of these wineries that are producing 100-point wines. But I think his true story comes through the wines that he makes with his wife at Melka Estates. And right. His wife is Sherry, and thought for kind of my pairing for the best actress with the wife in particular, this was really perfect, because as the film kind of shows, you have a husband at the forefront, but behind him, kind of doing all the legwork, is his wife. And though I will not say that Sherry stands behind Philippe in any way, they stand side by side in this winery. She is an enologist. She's a winemaker. She is a rock star in her own self. And the two of them, I think, create some of the most textured, concentrated, very, you know, story-filled, terroir-driven wines from Napa.
How do people find you, Haley?
Dallas Uncorked on Twitter and Instagram, or Red Wine with Breakfast. And obviously, we'd love to have anybody listen to our podcast, which is Cogill Wine and Film, A Perfect Pairing.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. And Gary, is he still there or is he gone home?
He's right here.
Yeah, we're snuggling. We're snuggling around the phone on the Big Island of Hawaii. It's not a bad thing.
You snuggle well. I can't believe you got snow. Have yourself a great Oscars, okay?
Yeah, thanks, you too. And may the force be with you, Terry. So to you, my friends.
Go
so
and find
you.
The Cogills, by the way, everybody. You can find them at Cogill Wine and Film. Just check out the podcast. It's really good. Thank you.
Thanks, Terry.
Thanks, Terry.
The segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Road 13, Canada's Winery of the Year. They're on winter hours right now until Easter weekend. Open Monday to Saturday from 1 to 4. Close Saturdays and stat holidays. And they open for the summer on Easter weekend. And just a heads up to Wine Club members, the next shipment is in March, full of newly bottled releases. All the details at road13vineyards.com.